This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's go over to another case that's going on right now, 30 years in the making. Tupac. Tupac Shakur was shot at a red light in Las Vegas at Cobalt and Flamingo. And I've pointed that out every time I've driven through that intersection. You know what happened right here, right? And whoever's in the car, it's like, what? I'm like, Tupac. And there's a little memorial by one of the lights there that still is there to this day that people put things at. I was over I was over in Vegas not that long ago, and I got to point it out to my daughter as we drove by Cobalt.
Who said who, what, where, when?
Yeah, and Harper knew Tupac. Anyway, 30 years ago, Cobalt and Flamingo, after the Mike Tyson fight, for 3 decades, nobody ever charged in the murder of Tupac. Now there's one man sitting in the courtroom, Dwayne Keefe D. Davis, and the prosecution's best evidence is that book that he wrote. Talking about it. He bragged about it for years on camera, in interviews, in a memoir called Compton Street Legend. And now that he's actually on trial for murder, his defense is telling the jury it was all fiction, all lies. He just did it for profit. He became the I killed Tupac industry. The question the audience is screaming is the one the jury has to answer. Can the man talk himself out of a murder charge that he's already admitted that he's guilty of? That's where this case is at. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, my co-host with us as we discuss this. It can be any case, really. This guy literally wrote a book about it. He went on YouTube, on Vlad TV, a big hip-hop show, talked about it. He told law enforcement about it through a proffer agreement. And now his lawyer is standing in front of a jury saying it was all fiction. It was all a big old lie. Robin, from an FBI perspective, from a behavioral perspective, when someone confesses to the same crime in 4 different formats over 30 years, is there any version of that where it's not real?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Living in the world of maybe. So having written 4 books and fictionalized stories and those things because I have to protect the national security of the United States and our sources, methods, and allies, I understand the fictionalizing of things, although they're all based in core truths and outcomes and things like that. So I understand what publishers do, trying to get a better story out of things. So they're going to sell more millions of books so they can make a profit off of you. So they're not really vested in your success as much as they're vested in their own. So I get that. I researched this as well. Books are often very commonly used as evidence in cases, and they can be used against you. What's going to be hard for him to overcome, if he can even overcome it as well, is not the statements, because people make false confessions all the time. He can claim that those are fiction for selling books, and it sells a great story. But if law enforcement can go back and corroborate all the things that he says in that book, the timelines, and show the corroboration between real life evidence and the storyline in the book, and they overlap completely, that's a very, very hard thing to overcome. Because again, what you're showing is his book outlines his life arc.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we talk about all the time. And then if his life arc, that's supposedly in his book, which is a nonfiction memoir, and he's now claiming it's a fiction memoir, but actually the real life investigators can show that the real life arc, backed by forensic evidence, backed by interviews, backed by all the data they've collected over the years, matches that memoir. That's a very, very difficult thing to overcome if you can even do it.
Well, and the premise of this all is it starts with an agreement with investigators over the murder of Biggie, actually. Mm-hmm. The notorious B.I.G., Christopher Wallace, which happened within a year of Tupac's murder. And he was testifying about information regarding that case. And in that testimony, which is called a proffer agreement, and Eric has said it here, Bob has said it here, they don't advise a lot of clients to ever do it because they're very shady, if you will, these agreements with law enforcement. Sometimes they're not in writing. Sometimes they're just verbal. Sometimes right. they're the only way you're going to get off the hook for something. So either take this or we're going to lock you up. So people take the chance because it's better than the alternative. They're not the most solid ground to be walking on. Keefe D, basically the way this story goes is, took the proffer agreement, talked about being in the car, not being the trigger man. Orlando Anderson allegedly was a trigger man, but he's the one who was a shot caller, baller, 20-inch blaze, owned an Impala, called a get late tonight. I mean, okay, you don't know that song, but I taught you. But he's basically the shot caller here in this thing. And he's arguing that, okay, I said it for this, to help this investigation under this proffer agreement. I can't go and share this story now. I can't write a book about it. I can't talk about it in interviews. The government is saying, no, you can't. That was just for this, but we never really gave you the stipulations of what you could and couldn't do either. So now we're coming after you because you violated this unsaid agreement kind of that we had here. But it was his choice. It was his choice to not just let it die there with the one-on-one private conversation with investigators. He openly chose to basically make it his brand, make it what he's known for. This is his legend. He was the one in the car that gave Orlando the gun, that called the shots, and yep. then profited it off of the story for 20 years. It's a hard one to overcome, considering that's your story, unless you're just going to come out and say you're a complete fraud, which is basically what he's doing at this point in time. Here's a comment from one of our channels. Everybody else who was in that white Cadillac is dead.
Yep.
Orlando Anderson is dead. The two other passengers dead. Keefe D is the only one alive. How do you prosecute a 30-year-old murder when your defendant is both the only suspect and the only witness that is still alive? Yeah, that's difficult. But yeah. I think you do when the guy wrote books about it and did interviews.
Yeah,
and he shut up. You'd have a lot harder case.
That's it. You know, if you wrote about it, and again, if he was in a different state when he did this, it might be something different because, he wasn't the trigger man. He doesn't claim he's the trigger man, but it's in Nevada, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, in Las Vegas.
Yeah. The law there is that if you were the one who orchestrated it and facilitated it, you can be charged with the same murder of it. So had he done this in some other state, he might have been getting free with it. I'm actually pretty impressed that the law enforcement actually got a hair up their butt and did something about this case 30 years later. So I'm more, you know, it's interesting with things like this. I get really curious about the people involved. It's like, what inspired them to want to do that? Because they're kind of putting themselves out there. When you start dealing with old gang members and gang leaders, you know, you're kind of putting yourself in an interesting spot in life.
Well, I mean, one of the biggest problems with this case has always been no snitching and people not talking. I mean, there's been investigators on this case forever, and there's been many documentaries about it, and essentially where it all ends is, well, the people who did know information or could provide information have chosen not to provide information, and that kind of puts the investigation at a standstill. They can only be as good as the information that's being provided and what they can actually get to. Suge Knight was in the car with Tupac when it happened. He survived. He's sitting in prison right now and reportedly won't cooperate with the trial.
Right.
If the one living witness on the victim's side won't testify, what does that tell you about how this world actually works, and does it matter for the actual verdict? The people involved here, I don't think, really have much of a vested interest in justice, the way that the rest of society looks at justice, meaning locking someone up for this crime. Most of this just gets handled in the street. And 30 years later, it's already been handled in the street. Everyone else is dead at this point.
Right. And snitches get stitches. That's why you're not talking in prison, because he's still there. You know, I go on the pragmatic side of these things behind the scenes about how the sausage is made, as Bob Mata says.
Yeah.
looking at the motivations for taking this case on and reinvigorating it after 30 years, one, you want justice done. You know, on an altruistic side, on our side, we're saying, oh, wow, you know, some really diligent investigators, you know, said we have to have served justice here and everything. But remember, there's a lot of cases that are unsolved you can be served justice on. You know, believe it or not, I would put money on the bet that at some point, there's someone inside an administration somewhere out in Las Vegas that says, hey, we need some attention, we need some funding, we need some collars, we need an easier low-hanging fruit one that we can attack to bring attention to this because we need a resource here, we need to have more detectives over this, so we need to be able to justify it. There's all kind of things going on behind the scenes that typically people never see that I've seen extensively that would also give added motivation to re-go at this case. But when you don't have any witnesses willing to talk, you know, we've had such amazing advancements in law enforcement. Even just listen to the great Bob Mata's Gacy file case called Buried. He talks about, you know, the things they had available to them in the 70s for law enforcement investigators compared to now. It's vastly different. And so even when this happened to now, the DNA evidence that might be available and all other forensic analysis that's available now that wasn't available then could be added to this case. But again, the book itself and being able to then corroborate timelines from other investigative techniques that are available to us now that weren't available then might have been a reason why they took another swing at this. And it's got a strong chance, I think, just because of that book.
I think it became such low-hanging fruit that they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
That they couldn't not go after this at some point because it sat there forever. And you literally had the person who's claiming they are the shot caller on this going on interviews all the time. It was like one a year you're finding Keefe D on basically talking about the same story about him. I mean, and it's like, Jesus. Like, I remember watching them going like, he's like literally admitting to this crime. Like, how is he not going to be charged with this? Surprise. At some point when you tempt fate by throwing that out there so many ways, they're going to come after you. I mean, I think if he had just shut up, we wouldn't be here. None of this would be going on.
Yeah.
And I mean, his proffer agreement would have stood, but he decided that he was going to make this a brand, and his ego, as twisted as it is, to think that, well, this is what I want to be known for. This is my legacy. That's an interesting one to like want to be going down with. Was more important than his freedom, and I think he thought that he was above it because talk about confirmation bias here. He had basically 30 years of freedom, being able to go out there and scream from the top of the hills, I was involved in the shooting of Tupac, and nobody came for him until they did.
And only in the last about 10 years from my research did he kind of turn a leaf over from what he was doing. But so here's an interesting little factoid, Tony, that we've talked about in other cases. Did you know the head of the department that is investigating this case is Steve Wolfson, the Clark County District Attorney? Did you know his current term ends on January 4th, 2027, and he's running for re-election? And that the current election is scheduled for November 3rd, 2026? I wonder if someone wanted a little bit more notoriety of being able to bring a big case to bear before his election.
And interesting timing that this has been delayed so many times right up to the butting up to the election itself.
Yeah. Look at me.
Wonder what that's about.
When you always got to look at intent and motivations behind absolutely everything. When something stands out and is a big wobble and a deviation from what you'd normally expect, and so something that's been dead for 30 years all of a sudden gets resurrected, you just don't look at the people themselves, you know, the perpetrator, the accused, and those in a circle. You look at absolutely everyone involved to see what you can discern from the intent, because that helps us predict behaviors, helps us understand what's going on, and then look for wobbles other places. For me, this begs the question, when you see someone going after an old case like this, all right, so who's bored? There's any other cases going on in Las Vegas of murders?
Yeah, it's not like there's a shortage of them there, really.
Yeah.
That's very true. And there's so many cases there. That's like kind of the missing link as to why is this happening now?
Not saying it's not righteous, but there's a lot of other things. And if you're looking at a reason why, well, there's one more big wobble.
You can be righteous, but also have incentives simultaneously. Yes. But I guess the question is more like, what came, you know, was the chicken before the egg? Are you doing it for the righteous reasons? And then this just happens to be the added value to it? Or is it, I need this added value. What's something righteous I can get myself involved in? Either way, if it reaches the truth at the end of the day, I'm cool with it.
Absolutely.
But only if it's truly going to go in the direction of reaching the truth. And we shall see. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue our conversation right there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.